Welcome to the Dogs and Deadlifts, Building Better Dogs podcast. If you like a podcast that is raw, unfiltered, and authentic, you have come to the right place. Our goal is to bring clarity around canine fitness and conditioning. We help people ignite their dog's performance and build better dogs. Join your host, Daniel Rose, as we discuss fitness, nutrition, and mindset for dogs. Let's do this. Here at Dogs and Deadlifts, we are on a mission to education around the basis of nutrition, movement and body awareness, strength training for dogs. We align with like-minded business and therefore ensure we bring you the best advice and equipment. Today, we would like to introduce you to X-Dog Weight and Fitness Vest. If you want to maximize your dog's genetic potential, increase their power, speed, and endurance, at Dog and Deadlifts, we teach people how to ignite their dog's performance. Safe, systematic, and injury-free. Using equipment like the X-Dog Weight and Fitness Vest. Get your X-Dog Vest and come join our community. Link and discount code in podcast notes.
Yes. This meeting is being recorded. Welcome back to the Dogs and Deadlifts podcast today. We're with special guest all the way from the UK, Lisa Hannaby. Welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, look, it's been a little while. Obviously, we've spoken before Christmas about you coming on the show, so I really appreciate you finding the time.
Yeah, no problem at all. It's taken a little bit of organising, but we're here, so it's good. But yeah, I appreciate the time difference because it's like 5 a.m. for you, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, but it's okay. That's what happens with most of my guests from obviously around the world, getting up at strange hours to report the podcast, but certainly all good.
That is dedication.
I certainly enjoy having these type of chats. So once again, thank you very much for finding the time.
No problem.
So I think it was maybe late last year that I happened to stumble across a podcast that you were on. I think it was with the Veterinary Rehabilitation Podcast. I think that was the one that I sort of stumbled across.
Yeah, online pet health. So they've got quite a good platform, and as you say, it's the vet rehabilitation. So my background is nutrition and psychology. So they were particularly interested in you know how nutrition does affect behaviour. So I think that was the podcast that sort of sparked your interest.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, I listened to it and I was like, yeah, you know, everything that you spoke about was like, I'm just like, yeah, super excited. And I think I, you know, within sort of an hour or so, I tracked you down and, you know, sort of reached out and I thought, yeah, you know, you'd be obviously an opportunity for you to come on the Dogs and Deadlifts podcast and have a chat. So that was sort of, you know, I don't know. Things sometimes drop in, you know, come about strange ways, I think.
Yeah. And to be honest, I mean, you know, when I saw Dogs and Deadlifts, I mean, you know, it's two of my favorite things because, you know, I love CrossFit. So as soon as I saw it, I was like, I don't even care what you talk about. I've got to go on that podcast.
Awesome. No, it's really great to have you here. So let's, I suppose, jump straight in and talk about, you know, about a little bit about you. So, you know, for our listeners out there, who you are, how you came about, obviously, you know, you business, things like that. Would you like to give us a bit of a background?
Yeah, of course. So I started in the human realm. So I was working with children and families primarily. So I, you know, I did a psychology degree and also child development. So that was sort of my area. And through the work that I did, I never really understood why we didn't consider nutritional intake and how it actually influenced behavior. You know, through all psychological assessments and screening, we never considered, you know, dietary habits or food journals. So that's when I got particularly interested in nutrition. So fast forward a couple of years and, you know, I'd sort of had enough of the humans, like some of us do. And I decided that, you know, I just wanted to sort of start afresh, really, and move over to the pet world. So I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. So I retrained as a groomer. set up a business, and then set up a dog boarding business, a cattery, and then a raw food shop. So that's sort of how I got into the pet world, but I couldn't really leave the psychology and the nutrition. So I did more study and undertook a master's in human nutrition and did some biochemistry and some sports nutrition training, and kind of got into the pet nutrition realm. So yeah, it was sort of, it's come full circle really. But yeah, just from humans to pets, because let's be honest, they don't talk back.
Mm-hmm. And it's an area of extreme interest, I suppose, and growth over the last sort of 3 to 5 years. You know, people are becoming more aware of what's going into their dogs, and obviously we'll talk a little bit about later. The big dog food debate and things like that. You know, kibble raw. You know, all this sort of stuff. But at the end of the day, I believe that it's fantastic that we're seeing people actually, you know, be conscious of what's going in.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, we're seeing this shift in humans. So I suppose it's natural that we would see this shift in pets. And, you know, people adore their pets, and rightly so. So we want the best for them. And, you know, what's quite difficult is, you know, the internet is brilliant, but equally it can be a bit of a minefield. So, you know, it's great that people are talking about this, because we need to get the right information out, and you know, and that's what's key to optimizing health.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I took a little bit of time, and part of my I took about 6 months, and I worked for quite a large pet retail chain, and I was assistant manager there for about 6 months. And it was just fascinating to see people come in and they just don't know, right? They just don't know where to start.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it sort of dawned on me. I rescued some chickens last year, and I went to the pet food store, and, you know, I stood in the middle of the aisle, and I'm thinking, I don't even know what to feed these chickens, because I have no clue about raising chickens. And then I thought, is this how pet owners feel? You know, although I've done all that research with pets, so, you know, put me in a cat or dog food aisle and I know what I'm looking for. But the chickens, I was like, I have no idea.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and I consciously made an effort to be, you know, on the retail shop floor talking to people, because, you know, at the end of the day, they don't know, and they just get a little bit confused. And then we have, you know, retail staff, let's just say, you know, young retail staff that it's a second job, or, it's something that they're just doing to make it while they go to uni or things like that, you know, and their education themselves is not quite, on point either, you know, so, trying to get them to try and explain to someone the difference between, say, we'll talk about dog, you know, kibble, you know, the cheap, you know, $50 bag of kibble compared to the $200 bag, you know, versus the fresh and the raw. They just, you know, they just haven't had the training and the knowledge themselves to be able to pass on that education.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we do have to consider that, you know, in some retail stores that, you know, a lot of the training might come from the manufacturers. So, you know, it's significantly biased as well, isn't it? So, you know, you're walking into a pet store, and are you actually getting accurate information, or just from those manufacturers?
Yeah, 100%, 100%. So I wanted to try and focus today's conversation a little bit about athletes, sports and performance in regards to, you know, nutrition, a little bit, rather than sort of an over, you know, a general sort of, introduction to nutrition and raw kibble debate, that sort of stuff. So I wanted to, make it a little bit more sports specific, and also, you know, dive a little bit deeper, and especially, you know, I wanted to start off talking about where it all starts, you know, and there's been a little bit of research over the last while about gut health, and I wanted to talk about potentially, you know, getting that right and starting, you know, from the gut and going from there, if that's cool.
yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and it makes sense that we're paying attention to this, because, you know, like, you know, my interest in sports nutrition in humans, like, we're paying attention to that. You know, we know we need to fuel for optimal performance. So why wouldn't the same, apply to our dogs? And it's about understanding how those energy systems work in our dogs. And, you know, we do have similarities between humans. So, you know, when we look at at what they utilize. But I suppose the biggest debate is do dogs use carbohydrates? Because, you know, when we look at human athletes, you know, we've sort of moved away from that carb loading, but we still acknowledge that actually we will utilize carbohydrates as an energy source. And, you know, if we're looking at fueling the canine athlete, you know, pretty much every dietary guideline suggests that dogs don't need carbohydrates and they don't have a need for them. But then when we're looking at high energy needs, does that still apply? And you know, it's about thinking that through, really. So yeah, it is a conversation we need to have.
For sure. And you know, I've been experimenting myself with I call it like a recovery drink. And I've been including, you know, after exercise or training with the dogs, I've been including oats in that particular drink, if you like, just as an experiment, because there doesn't seem to be a huge amount of studies that I can fall back on to say, you know, yep, this is going to work or this is not work, you know. So as we both know, there's a couple of studies there and they seem to be both, you know, very different ends of the scale.
And I think, you know, we've got to consider breed differences in dogs. You know, again, if we sort of liken it to human performance, then we can look at the different muscle types that we have in the body, and ultimately different breeds of dogs will have different muscle types. So, you know, there is potentially an argument for you know, carbohydrate usage in the speedy dogs. So we're looking at like the greyhounds, the whippets, because they have more fast twitch muscles, and as we know, fast twitch muscles, you know, have a higher utilization of glucose. So if we can get that carbohydrate content into the body, they can use it, because it's that flat out sprint, isn't it? Which is what they do. But then when we're looking at, you know, these endurance dogs, we're looking at the sled dogs, so like the Malamutes, the Huskies and things, they have a better ability at using fat. So when we, you know, time and time again, we're looking at, you know, what we feed them through their endurance events. And when they've got a high fat diet, they perform much better. So, you know, we can say, well, actually, there isn't a need for carbohydrates in their diet as long as we've got a high fat content. So, you know, I think we've really got to consider these breed specifics before we say, well, you know, this applies to dogs. And I'm a huge fan of N equals one. You know, ultimately, if it applies to one dog, then it could apply to your dog type thing. And, you know, as much as people think that, you know, it's a bit of a fad about personalized nutrition in humans, I think we've got to consider this approach to our dogs as well. And as you say, you know, experiment with your dogs to see if it helps them or if it hinders them.
Yeah, for sure. And that's, like I said, for me, you know, our events are anywhere from 3 to 5 Ks, either canny cross or bike draw. That's our, you know, our primary sport that we do, you know, so, and often, you know, we may do a race on a Saturday and then have to back up on a Sunday, you know, so recovery and primarily nutrition is super important, you know, for me to be able to perform on the second day at our peak. You know, definitely we were all prepped for the first day, but it's the second day, and depending if you're doing multiple classes as well, you know, that we want to make sure that we're fueled and ready to go. So for me, there's definitely noticeable that on the second day, without, say, the right nutrition, sleep is important as well, because we're often camping, you know, we're often camping. And the dogs are restless. There's a number of other dogs around, you know, so sleep, nutrition, and obviously a bit of body work, it goes a long way to try and, you know, get our performance on point for the second day of events.
Yeah, and I think you've made a really good point there, because, you know, as much as we're saying, you know, we're fueling for performance, so we're considering nutritional intake, it's, you know, for me, nutrition is a piece to a puzzle. So, you know, that sleep and recovery is huge, because as you say, you know, when there's other dogs around and you're camping, there's noises, you've got that ramped up nervous system, haven't you? So when we're looking, if you think about this ramped up nervous system, which in effect is a stress response, then, you know, it's ultimately a redirection of resources, which can affect digestive function. So even in that period, you might plan to the best of your your ability of what you're going to feed your dog. But if actually they're in a heightened state of stress, that digestive function could actually be quite poor. So you don't necessarily know that they're absorbing, you don't necessarily know that they're utilizing. So that is another consideration to make. And actually, how do you modulate that environment for them to optimize that digestive function? Because, you know, as much as we say you are what you eat, the reality is you are what you eat, absorb and utilize. So yeah, you know, that's a really important part.
Yeah, and I've heard you speak about it, and I'd love to touch on it while we're talking about nervous system, you know, parasympathetic, but the sympathetic nervous systems. And like I've listened to, you know, a little bit of, you know, your podcast and things like that about how we can stimulate those or you know, I really liked it, you know, so I'd love to, yeah, for you to jump into a little bit about that, if that's cool.
Yeah, of course. Realistically, when we're talking about the parasympathetic and the sympathetic nervous system, we're talking about that stress response. So the sympathetic response is that sort of ramped up stress response, and it's the fight or flight that we tend to know it as. The parasympathetic response is that calming phase. So I always try and remember the difference as a parachutist sort of floating to the ground, just to try and remember. I mean, it's kept me going since uni and I still remember the difference. Mm-hmm. So we'll kind of stick with that. And, you know, it's, we need stress. You know, if you think about going for a job interview or, you know, sitting an exam, we need that stress response because it makes us alert and it makes us perform. The issue is when it becomes chronic. And, you know, for our dogs, and we see it in human athletes, you know, ultimately any physical activity is a slight stress. And when we adapt to that, it doesn't become a problem. And this is where we see, you know, if you've got a highly trained athlete, they perform quite well. And, you know, they become elite because they adapt to that. But actually, if you've got a high volume of training without them adapting to it, then that's when it becomes a chronic stress and it impacts the body. So it's about supporting our dogs to adapt to that. But equally, when we do have this ramped up response in physical activity, we want to engage that parasympathetic response as well to help them come down. So in humans, my top tip is to hum. Because it activates what you might have heard of the vagus nerve, which is that sort of highway between, you know, it's through the body and it is, you know, vagus means wandering because it touches all parts of the body. But we want to activate that to sort of calm us down. So humming in humans, but for dogs, chewing is a really good way of activating that. So if you do have this ramped up dog, an opportunity to chew can actually, it reduces the heart rate, it stimulates that vagus nerve, so it can kick in that parasympathetic response and help them calm down. But what's really interesting is on the other side of that, chewing can actually improve cognitive function. So we can actually use it before activities as well. So if you give them something to chew sort of 15 minutes before they're performing, it actually, it creates that sort of laser focus and improved cognitive function as well. So we kind of get this double whammy. So, you know, if you're sort of, you know, off eventing in different locations, I'd always say, you know, pack some things to chew. So whether it's a Kong, a stuffed Kong, you know, meaty bones or just, you know, beef air pipes, anything like that, you can sort of kill two birds with one stone.
Yeah. And that's something that, you know, for me, there's light bulb moments sometimes and you're like, bang. And, I really love that, the fact that, something that my dog does potentially on a regular basis, we can be conscious and provide it to them at a certain particular time to therefore potentially increase performance and on the flip side, recover.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's such a natural behavior for dogs, you know, and there's, you know, okay, it starts annoying us when they're puppies because they want to eat absolutely everything. But, you know, when you kind of think, well, they naturally want to explore the world through chewing, and then, you know, we try and stop them doing that. Whereas actually, if we just offer them opportunities where they can demonstrate that, you know, it's amazing what dogs will teach us when we let them, isn't it?
Oh, 100%. And on that as well, you know, I'm big into essential oils, you know, lavender, massage, things like that. Can those type of things obviously help as well?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, I'm not qualified in that arena.
Yeah, of course, of
But
course.
yeah, I mean, dogs do have a much more, they have an increased sense of smell compared to us. So some of them can be quite overpowering, but equally, you do have that calming effect. So there are certain essential oils that will help stimulate that parasympathetic response, like it does in us humans, if we're lowering that heart rate. And I suppose that double whammy occurs between humans and dogs because dogs will respond to our stress response. So if we're performing with them, we're feeling a bit edgy, we're feeling a bit agitated. Actually, if we can try and control our heart rate and control our response, then it will have that knock-on effect to our dogs as well. So essential oils, yeah, I'm a huge fan of them, but I couldn't tell you which ones to do what.
Look, that's cool. No dramas. And like I said, I diffuse a lavender of a nighttime, and I'm out within like 2 minutes, right? I'm done. That's the sort of effect it has on me. Certainly just it's best to speak to someone qualified in that department, but it's certainly
Only because with certain essential oils, I know that they do have toxicity too, with dogs and cats. So if you've got a multi-pet home, that's when I'm kind of like, I don't really know. So go see someone who
Yeah, no.
does.
All good. We'll hand ball that off to the qualified people, but I just
Absolutely.
thought I'd mention it to get people's sort of brain thinking about obviously the chewing side of things, but also what else they can do as a
Yeah,
whole.
100%.
So maybe I'll find a an expert on nutritional sorry on oils, essential oils and things like that, and bring them
That
on the
would be
podcast,
amazing. Yeah, it
and
would be.
we'll talk about that. All right, so I find that super interesting, and I do want to just jump. I'm going to jump around a little bit today, but I wanted to talk about as I mentioned earlier, especially the gut and how we can get the gut firing and the gut brain axis and things like that. So I'd love to talk about that and potentially how people can sort of start to think about that, but also what can go into increase performance and things like that around that whole sort of gut brain
The axis.
microbiome, all the juicy stuff
Yes.
here.
And I think the point is gut health is so important because it literally, we're finding new axes every day. It feels like, sort of I get a stream of new science every day, and every day there is something new. So we've got the gut skin axis, we've got the gut brain axis, the gut thyroid, the gut musculoskeletal. And what's really interesting about that, especially for performance, is that actually they've noticed that when they've supplemented certain probiotics, so these are products that are beneficial to the host, that actually it's increased muscle growth, endurance and strength. So, just by ingesting certain bacterial strains, it has supported muscle health, which, it just goes to show that everything kind of sits with the gut, really. So yeah, the gut brain axis, it's literally, that highway. And really, we can sort of think of it as not Vegas, really. What goes on in the gut doesn't stay in the gut at all. And this is where the interest came that, what we eat affects our behavior. So ultimately, if we think about the gut microbiome, it's a community of microbes, and they can, when different foods make it into the large intestine, they can ferment these foods, and they can produce certain metabolites which talk to the brain. And if we think about going sort of brain chemistry without going too deep into it, we've got neurotransmitters and we've got neurons, and basically stuff either happens in the brain or it doesn't. So we can think about these metabolites as either making things happen or slowing things down. So, and this is where we kind of, if we think about depressive behavior or anxious behavior, so when we've got anxious behavior, we've got things firing off because, literally our mind's thinking about everything, and the same happens with our dogs. So if we've got a stressed or an anxious dog, you'll see sort of like that pacing behavior, you'll see sort of looking out the window and not settling. If you think about, things are firing in the brain, and too much is going on almost. Whereas if we think about depressed behavior or lethargy, then, you know, things are slowing down in the brain and things aren't really happening. So what I find just amazing is that the metabolites that are produced in the gut can result in these changes in the brain, which I just find absolutely amazing. And, you know, it's all about making sure that this microbiome, the community of microbes in the gut, stays sort of in balance, shall we say. So, you know, everything's working as it should and metabolites are being produced in the right amounts and they can talk to the brain and everything is kind of hunky-dory, shall we say. But the issue is when our microbiome gets a bit skewed and a bit off. And what can cause this? We know that ultra-processed food absolutely kills the gut microbiome. So we see this in humans. We see it in rat studies. And, you know, we're seeing it in dogs as well. And, you know, you kind of, I know we weren't going to touch on the whole kibble raw debate, but, you know, when we talk about ultra-processed foods, it's kibble, isn't it?
100%. Look, let's do it right now. Kibble's shit, all right?
You know, and it's I'm just following the science. I'm following the data.
Of course. Of course.
You know, there are other things as well. And I suppose, you know, the obvious one is, you know, if it's bacteria in our gut, whenever there's antibiotics that are administered, then it doesn't just wipe out the bad bacteria, it wipes out the good bacteria as well. So, you know, if you've got dogs that are religiously on antibiotics, and, you know, I suppose for our canine athletes, you know, if they get the odd sort of cut, scrape, gouge, and they're consistently being given antibiotics, it's a consideration to make because they might well need those antibiotics. But equally, you know, if we have this overusage of them, then we've got to consider the impact it has on the microbiome. But equally, you know, depending on, you know, the terrain that we're running across, I mean, you'd like to think that those dogs who spend a lot of time outdoors, they have that exposure to the soil and ultimately the microbes in the soil. So actually, they would have a great exposure to a range of bacteria. But then, you know, if we're sort of running across, you know, where we've put pesticides and different toxins outside, then we've got to consider that that could get on their paws. If they're grooming themselves, you know, they're ingesting it, and that will skew the microbiome as well. So there are environmental factors to consider. There's the food that we feed them, but then, you know, we've also got to consider that, you know, there's more and more data coming out that we do have maternal health to consider. So maternal stress can significantly skew the development of the microbiome. So, you know, as much as we'd like to think that we're, you know, getting our dog from these great breeders, you know, if we've got a rescue dog or we don't necessarily know the history, then, you know, if we don't know the health of the mum, then that could significantly affect their gut health as well. So, and, you know, from what I said before about the foods that we eat and utilize and absorb, the microbiome is key to that as well. So it's all so tightly linked that gut health is, you know, kind of the key to everything.
Yeah, for sure. So for listeners out there, you know, so they've gone, all right, cool. You know, I get that. How do I know whether my dog's, you know, gut is in optimal condition at this point in time? You know, do they go see, like, obviously we'll break it right down, but do they go see their vet? Do they get a sample? You know, where to sort of, I suppose, how do they evaluate that and how do they move forward in regarding to optimizing that?
Yeah. And you know, there are so many people that are saying, you know, let's get the fecal samples really to establish this bacteria presence. But we haven't yet found the perfect composition. And it's like a fingerprint. Every body's will be different. So every dog's will be different. Every human's will be different. So we don't yet know the perfect microbiome. In humans, we're making huge progress with microbiome testing, but, you know, like anything, it's taking us a long time to catch up with canines. So there are companies on the market pretty much globally, but, you know, whether they have actually done what they set out to do yet, I think the data is possibly lacking. So so in terms of testing, it potentially could be a waste of money at this point, just because we haven't made the progress that we perhaps need to have done. But equally, you know, we need to look at the dog in front of us. So, you know, what is their health like? Are you seeing any skin issues? Are you seeing any itchiness? Are you seeing any behavioural issues that can't really be explained by anything else? You know, what is their performance like? So, you know, is there something that's concerning you in your dog? Because ultimately, if you're supporting that gut health, then you would probably start to see improvements. So I think, you know, the other thing to think about is their bowel movements. You know, the poo mm-hmm. will tell you everything. And you know, whether the digestive system is functioning as it should. Do you get many stressy symptoms? So, you know, it's the typical adrenaline poo, isn't it? So when yep. the dog's excited, you'll get that adrenaline poo. But actually, do you get that mm-hmm. more often than not? And is it just related to physical activity? So mm-hmm. so it's looking at that dog, but ultimately supporting gut health, it's about feeding the right food.
Yeah, and that was sort of I was going to prompt it, but you know, you've mentioned it already. Moving away from those highly processed foods, you know, that would be on my top of my list. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm very much about promoting the nutritional needs of dogs. And ultimately, you know, when you know what dogs need, then how is the best mm-hmm. way to give them that? But, you know, we've got to consider that ultra processed foods, you know, that the basically they get the vitamins and minerals from synthetic versions, which isn't great mm-hmm. because the body doesn't utilize them in the same way. There is obviously, mm-hmm. you know, cases where supplements are necessary, but, you know, as the same meal, you know, two or three times a day, Is that really appropriate? We've got to consider mm-hmm. how the dog actually absorbs and utilizes what's found in that. You know, what's the protein content? What's the fat content? Can they actually absorb it? Can they utilize it? So mm-hmm. so for me, you know, in human realms, we always tell humans to eat whole foods, don't we? So why is this not mm-hmm. the same for our dogs? Yep. It just makes sense, yep. doesn't it?
Oh, 100%. And I'm going to use myself as an example. You know, we spoke of it before we hit record, and the last, you know, I've had a few ongoing health issues, a few immune issues, you know, over the last probably 12 months. And I decided like enough's enough. So I went to my doctor, I got full blood tests, you know, like very, very detailed amount of blood tests. And then, the doctor said, "Oh, you know, there is an immune condition there. However, you have to manage it via, you know, when you develop symptoms, you have to manage it via Panadol and rest. That was it, right?
Really useful.
Thank you, thank you, conventional doctor. I appreciate that.
Super helpful.
So, So the very next day, I organised an appointment with a naturopath.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I went to the naturopath. We talked. She was quite impressed with the amount of blood tests and what the doctor tested for.
Brilliant.
And we had a number of tests. She found a few deficiencies, and we're still like, let's trial this for a month. You know, I walked out there with you know, pills and potions, and you know, you wouldn't believe it, right? And look. I paid for it, right? Which is fair enough. However, I also had to change my diet. So whether you know, some people support this or not, but I went full vegetarian for the last 5 to 6 weeks now. Yeah. And I've limited processed foods. My energy and my immunity, you know, well, immunity for me, you know, I'm currently sitting here in isolation with COVID with no symptoms whatsoever.
Yeah.
You know, so previously, you know, I'd a cold and I'd be in bed for a week, right? So whether I can only, this is personal experience, and this is by all means you know, I don't want people rushing out there to do the same thing, right? I can only go on my personal experience. So, you know, my change of diet, my approach to probiotics, there's vitamin D, there's zinc, there's, you know, I've got it, right? And at the moment, I'm feeling better than I've ever felt. You know, and subsequently I've also, with minimal exercise, dropped about 5 kilos, right? So, you know, in that period of time. So a change, you know, bringing things to, you know, to a conscious level, I suppose, in regards to what's going into my body, having that, getting that gut health right, getting those whole foods, no highly processed foods, no Coke, no sugar, and I'm feeling better than I've ever felt.
Yeah. And, you know, and this is the, you know, we keep seeing it time and time again. A lot of the ultra processed food, you know, it does increase levels of inflammation in the body. And whilst we need inflammation, it's important to our health. We don't need this chronic state of inflammation. And, you know, the same goes for our dogs. We can apply that to our dogs. You know, we see all of these inflammatory conditions in our dogs, like the skin issues, the joint issues. And then we're feeding a food that actually contributes to levels of inflammation. It just doesn't make any sense, does it?
Not at all, you know. And but once again, you know, and that's one of the, you know, my missions and, you know, the reason for the podcast is that, you know, it's there, it's free, it's to educate, yeah? You know, and if I can send a link to someone who's not sure, you know, about a chat that we have, and they take one thing away, and it's potentially that, hey, your dry food or your kibble is highly processed, you know, you may not go away from it completely, but let's add some, you know, some fresh or some you know, and some raw food into it, yeah.
This is, you know, this is so important, you know, because it can be a huge leap going to, you know, a fully raw diet or a fully cooked diet. And, you know, some people haven't got the time, they haven't got, you know, so for me, it's, you know, in human realms, I always promote the diversity diet, you know, trying to get as many different foods, plant foods in as possible. And, you know, the same kind of applies to our dogs. So even if you can't move away, you know, especially if you're competing and kibble is actually just really easy because it's handy to travel with, then add some fresh to the bowl, you know, add some fish, add some veggies, add some meats, add some organs. You know, it is just about sort of boosting that content, because even, you know, small additions to the bowl has, you know, time and time again in the data, it's been seen to have these massive health benefits. So, you know, just the leftovers from, you know, if you're doing some leafy greens or some carrots, you know, anything, chuck them in the bowl.
Yeah, for sure. Now, there's I just want to digress a little bit. There's probably two subjects I want to sort of touch on before we sort of wind things up. One is primarily nutrient timing, and you know, I suppose for the performance dog, you know, what we spoke about. Obviously, you know, hydration is super important, but nutrient timing and or you know, fast. Oh, how deep can you go? Rather fasted, you know, fasted versus non. You know. Non-fasted exercise, etc. But you know, let's sort of open that up to, you know, what your opinion and on around that, if that's okay.
I mean, you know. There's huge contention in the human realms, so I suppose it makes sense that we haven't really got any clear answers in the canine, and you know, I suppose that's my answer really. It's about feeding the dog in front of you, and you know, that's kind of what I say. No matter what the dog is doing, it's feeding the dog in front of you. And you know, you might find that your dog does perform better fasted, because you know, they get so ramped up, they get so anxious and nervous and sort of stressed, ready to perform, that actually you can't feed them, because you know that they've just be pooing the whole way, or you know, they might actually be sick. So you know, if your dog performs well fasted, then great, but you know, it's really important to you know, have nutrition on point up until that point. And I suppose this is the point, isn't it? It's about making sure that nutrition is right every day, not just sort of like the couple of days before performance or a couple of days after type thing.
That's right. And gone are the days for me, right, where you know, back when I was younger and I was playing rugby, and you know, it would be carb load day, you know, the day before. Yeah. You know, and mum would make the biggest pasta meals you've ever seen in your life, right? You'd just be hooking in spaghetti, you know, ravioli, the whole footy team would come around.
and you know, but that's what we believed for years. And you know, and it's so different. I mean, you know, I was talking to some ultra marathon runners, and you know, like in humans, they sort of, I think, I mean, it keeps changing. Is it like between 30 and 60 grams of carbs per hour? And this, you know, ultra marathon runner, he was like, well, I get about 15 grams and I'm absolutely fine. And he's been doing it for probably 20 years. You know, he's adapted to that intake. And, you know, I suppose it's really difficult to study it in dogs. And ultimately, does anybody want to study it in dogs? You know, it's getting the funding to do so. We do have a lot more data in humans, but you know, it's figuring out what your dog performs best on. And you know, that there might be some guidelines that come out and say you should feed X at this time and X at this time, but if it doesn't suit your dog, it doesn't suit your dog.
I agree. And then, you know, like let's talk just briefly about post exercise for a moment. You know, the biggest concern or the biggest worry people have is, you know, if I feed too early post exercise or you know, obviously that's worried about bloat, you know, you know, so that's the biggest concern that people have post exercise, you know.
Which, you know, is a valid consideration. And you know, again, we still don't really know the full cause of bloat. You know, that there are so many factors to consider. And, you know, I've got two large breeds, so I've probably gone through everything. You know, I'm thinking about the raised bowls and, you know, not drinking too much water after food and, you know, this, that and the next thing. But there does seem to be a genetic element as well. And you know, sometimes some owners will do everything right to avoid it and the dog still gets bloat. And then you'll get other owners that have no idea, do everything wrong, and the dog's absolutely fine. So it's again, you know, it's a consideration to make. And I suppose it's figuring out, you know, how soon it suits you to sort of refuel. And equally, if you have got that back-to-back period, then, you know, ensuring that you're refueled enough for the next day, but, you know, with enough time that it doesn't affect their performance the next day. So it's finding that sweet spot, isn't it, for your dog?
Yeah, 100%. That's where, once again, going back to my little recovery drink that I was making up, you know. So I was making it up as a liquid, you know. I got the Nutribullet out, and I was making up, blending it up and providing that, you know, within 30 minutes after the exercise, you know, as a drink, you know. So that was one way that I was, you know, getting around a certain amount of things, you know, and it certainly certainly was working quite well for me, you know. But it was like a recovery smoothie or thick shake.
But you know, it's figuring out what works for your dog, isn't it? And you know, they are so different, and we do have these, you know, breed differences. We do have the muscle differences, you know, energy metabolism, and you know, we've also got to consider, like, the gut health will affect energy metabolism as well. So how much energy they derive from all of those nutrients as well. So there are, you know, as I said, N equals one. It's your dog, and work out what works for your dog.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and so I suppose the other thing is that I wanted to sort of finalize supplementation. You know, as in going and buying, you know, whether it be a probiotic or a, you know, or a, we won't talk about, you know, hydration supplements, but generally just you know, vitamin B supplements, or you know, those sort of supplements.
Yeah.
If you're not, you know, if you're, let's just say you're feeding a kibble or something like that, and you know you're not quite there yet, but you want to add some supplements, you know, do you recommend supplements? And also, you know, how do people just walk into the supermarket and get them? You know, what do you have a particular, I'm open to brands and stuff like that. Certainly, and we're not against naming brands and things like that here.
Yeah, I mean, it totally depends on you know, the needs of the dog and what they're being fed. I mean, we do find in quite a few homemade diets and, you know, raw diets, cooked diets, we do find some deficiencies, like, you know, it varies, to be honest. So B vitamins, for example, just because they're used in such high quantities in the body, and they are water soluble, so there is this high turnover. So, you know, B vitamins, that they are water soluble, so they're easily excreted from the body. But what we do find is, in, you know, in performance dogs, in highly stressed dogs, we do have this high turnover, so it is certainly a consideration to make. But for B vitamins, we want them in their methylated form, so it's the active form in the body, because when we ingest B vitamins, they have to undergo a process to activate them, shall we say. And in some bodies, this isn't particularly efficient. So if it's in its methylated form, then it goes in straight in its activated form, so it can be used immediately. So that could be a consideration to make, but they are water soluble, so, you know, generally safe margins. I mean, I'm a big fan of joint supplementation in dogs, especially when they're active. So, you know, we're looking at the chondroitin, the glucosamine. Also MSM, I'm a big fan of that, really, just because, you know, it does, there's a process in the body called sulfation, which actually in another process, it contributes to the structure of joints and sort of connective tissues. So actually, you know, especially in the canine athlete, we need that to be efficient and to be working. So that's why I'm a huge fan of MSM, which you can find in a powder form generally. Green lipped mussels are brilliant for joint health. But I mean, that's not a supplement really, it's just a food that you can add to the bowl. Yeah, any of the pat your dog. So joint supplementation, especially for the canine athlete, really, because we do see, you know, the trauma to the joints, the stress to the joints, the degradation. So we want to avoid that at all costs, really. Sometimes we, well, I say sometimes, quite often we see vitamin D deficiency in dogs. So, you know, we know it's the sunshine vitamin in humans because, you know, it hits our skin and we convert it in our bodies, but dogs don't actually have that ability because they've got fur. So they rely solely on dietary sources of vitamin D. And vitamin D has like, it has wide reaching effects throughout the body, key to immune function, key to mood, you know, vitamin D receptors are pretty much found everywhere. And ultimately you can think of it like a little radar. So the vitamin D receptor sort of sticks out into the bloodstream, searches for vitamin D, especially in our immune systems, and our dog's immune systems, if it doesn't find it, it's like, well, I'm not going to do my job today. So that's why we link vitamin D deficiency with poor immune function. Dogs rely solely on dietary sources to get their vitamin D. And in commercial foods, you know, we've seen a lot of products that have vitamin D toxicity, but then many don't even hit the minimum for vitamin D. So great sources are looking at oily fish or mushrooms. So you can cook some mushrooms and pop them into the food bowl. If you do eat mushrooms yourself, store them on the windowsill, because then the extra sunlight does actually increase the vitamin D content. And then, you know, just quickly saute them and put them in the pan. So that's another really good source. And, you know, any of the organ meats as well. So you can add... I'm a big fan of adding that to the bowl just to sort of increase vitamin D intake. But then potentially if there are low levels, you may consider supplementation. But it is a fat-soluble vitamin, so you do have an increased risk of toxicity. So I'd always get levels checked with the vet before you start doing that.
And that's what I was going to say. So, you know, heading out to your vet and getting a check via bloods is to get a good baseline and go from there.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you can ask for a vitamin and mineral panel with your vet and sort of see where they're up to, really. But, you know, I'm a huge advocate of food first. So try and get, you know, as much as you possibly can through the food. And then if you're still coming up low, then that's when you could consider supplementation.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, we've said it earlier, but that may be, you know, if you're feeding kibble, maybe adding some fresh or some raw into that dog's bowl to get those extras.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, kibble for me, the biggest thing to add to the bowl is you know, essential fatty acids, because, you know, more often than not, that, you know, they might have added them in the process, but actually by the time you get to feed them to your dog, that they've oxidized and they're actually more harmful than good to your dog. So, you know, adding fish into the diet would be, you know, a really good place to start. So your omega-3 fish, you know, fatty acids, so fish oil, hemp seed oil has a really good omega-3 to 6 ratio. So yeah, adding those, really.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, just on that, I'm not sure if you can hear my dog, but he's he's pushing the boundaries, like, I want to go for a run. you know, and on that, you know, I've got some good friends and supporters of the show here in Australia called Senoil, and that's you know, very high in omega-3. Where, you know, it's a flaxseed oil, it's a flaxseed oil base, so you know, certainly for those out there, if you want, that was I've done a podcast with those guys talking about their product and things like that as well. So that's certainly worth having a bit of a listen to, because they obviously doing a lot of now in the canine world, but also they do a lot in the horses right around the world as well. So certainly, you know, I'm a supporter of their product, and they're also a supporter of my show as well. So I appreciate that. all right, so let's sort of wind things up. So if sort of someone's out there been listening to us today, Lisa, and they've gone, you know, I really like what you're talking about, would love to reach out, how would they go about either talking to you or you know, learning a little bit more about what you do and therefore helping them or their dogs?
So you can find me at neurish.co.uk, so N-E-U-R-I-S-H, so it's a play on neuron, which is found in, you know, central nervous system, so the psychology side of things, and then nourish as in food. So neurish.co.uk. You can find me on Instagram and Facebook as well. So I tend to do webinars and lectures. So you can see I've got some series coming up with online pet health again. So we're doing a full four-parter on canine nutrition. So, you know, literally everything to do with canine nutrition. So yeah, that's where I can be found.
Yeah, awesome. Look, I appreciate, like I said, you coming on. I really enjoyed our chat, and I really hope that, people listen today can get something and take away and either reach out or even just have little light bulb moments and go, hey, I wouldn't mind adding this, or I wouldn't mind adding that to optimize, obviously, the dog's performance, whether, depending on whatever sport you do out there, So once again, thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Not a problem at all. So, guys, if you like what you heard today, please feel free to share, like, and subscribe. Also, if you wanted to leave a review, greatly appreciated.
Hey, Daniel here. Before we get into today's episode, I just wanted to jump in and let you know that my mini course on strength training for dogs has just launched. This is an 8-week program. It is a mini course with videos and downloadable PDFs that will get you started on your strength and conditioning training. I'm going to put the link in below in the description. I'd love for you to check it out. If you've got any questions, please let me know. In the meantime, enjoy today's episode.